I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Lightning Dogs, the official podcast, is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and more importantly, with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Lightning Dogs is conceived as an all-ages property, but these behind-the-scenes conversations are not all-ages. Listen in at your own discretion. Sometimes a great idea is truly like a bolt of lightning. And sometimes, if you're lucky enough, you can capture the exact moment that it strikes. That's what happened for us one fateful night while recording an episode of Nerdy Show. We accidentally launched a concept that derailed the entire show and in no time, our lives. We couldn't stop talking about our favorite action figures and B-movies while twisting them into strange creatures, weird adventures, and dog puns. Lots of dog puns, primarily courtesy of me. This is the story of Lightning Dogs, a journey steeped in the glory of 80s and 90s animation and sci-fi where anthropomorphic dogs tear through the wasteland of a ruined Earth, battling mutants, miscreants, and the evil Glampire. Coming soon to small screens, comic books, and podcasts! Or at least that's the goal. But how do you go from a crazy idea into a fully formed world of conflict and characters? How does a harebrained discussion become an animated cartoon series? That's what we're finding out firsthand. We've recorded the entire development of Lightning Dog since day one, from the moment of misconception to every world-building session and planning meeting. And the journey is still ongoing. Tune in as we create the world of Lightning Dogs. Live! It was July of 2014, and we'd done a bad, bad thing. We hadn't recorded or released an episode of Lightning Dogs in a whole year. It was a period of transition, and it had been a challenge to get the entire team together. So in the end, we didn't.
Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hi, I'm Tony.
Hey, I'm Doug.
And this is an episode devoted to the Lightning Dogs.
Howl noise.
Shamefully, it's been over a year since the last Lightning Dogs episode. That's inexcusable.
I think about him every day.
Yeah, I know.
I sketch him every chance I get.
We have not stopped thinking about Lightning Dogs this whole time. In the interim, we've been trying to not talk about Lightning Dogs because we want that to happen on the air, but we have done it a little bit. Like, it's been a year.
Me, Cap, and Brian were sitting next to each other at Heroes Con, and I had a lot of sketching time. So stuff got done, stuff got talked about.
If you haven't been following Lightning Dogs on Facebook, we've uploaded a ton of concept art there for new stuff. And actually, our time hanging out with Brian at Heroes Con led to finalizing some certain aspects of the visual stylings, at the very least, of Nerissa and Kane Corso and Kid.
Which I was so pleased to see, because it's like, Tony sits down next to me and he plops the notebook down. He's like, so we did some sketches of, Kid and Kane Corso. And I'm like, oh, man, but if we all weren't there to talk about it, how good. I open up and I'm like, oh, this is fucking awesome. it was right on. So I was so happy with it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I'm like, yep, you did not need me. This is really good.
I'm particularly pleased with Kid. And with Kane Corso, we were thinking about like different aspects to him. I was like looking at like 70s, early 80s businessmen, like people like Eldon Terrell from Blade Runner with the huge fucking glasses and the weird hairdo.
These early Lightning Dogs episodes were still being released as episodes of Nerdy Show. And since it had been so long, we figured some reintroductions were in order. The episode you're hearing now was originally cut in half and released as two episodes. A huge chunk of it was recapping everything we'd created so far. Everything you already know. But a lot of the characters were still early enough in development, so in some cases, the act of recapping them led to more inspiration and more details.
Kane Corso, he's the kind of anthropologist, archaeologist type. He's an expert in master culture, what
Masters
they call
are the humans.
The humans.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the shifty one, right? He's the one that you don't quite trust the whole time because his agenda is his own.
Picture Belloc from Indiana Jones.
Closer
Raiders
to that, in the sense of where it's like his morals may not line up with the mission objective.
Isn't there also some Dr. Smith from Lost in Space?
Very much, too? Yeah.
Well, pieces of that, yeah, you could say.
Yeah.
If you take the archaeology aspect of Belloc and the who am I of Mr. Smith?
I mean, that's not his personality, yeah, no, not right. at all.
That sort of dubiousness.
Yeah. The dubious scientist who is part of the team, but, you know.
Kind of by
Bush
by
came
just,
to shove, he, you know, he chooses.
You don't know
the,
where his loyalty lies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then finally, there's Kid, who is a
product of the 90s.
Yeah, she is all 90s all the time. Actually, last episode, we weren't sure if she was a boy or a girl. We've decided that she's a very androgynous girl.
And it would fit because she is a mutt. She's not one particular breed.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's basically John Connor. She's John Connor mixed with Comic Zone.
With some kid vid from Burger King.
And a little bit of Chris, a little bit of Chris Cross for the hairstyle. You guys should look at the concept art.
She's like teenager, we
were saying? She's a teenager.
Yeah.
She's the person that the kids watching this relate to.
In theory, except that she's actually cool, unlike all those, the television series where this idea malfunction completely.
Instead of the network mandating that we include this character, we're creating it from the get-go.
For a good purpose, too, so that if we could, you try to force it in later, you shoehorn it in, it wouldn't work. Whereas here, I believe the backstory for her was that she's a troubled teen back on the dog planet, and this is a military operation, but she is like such a genius at what she does, they are basically forced to take her along. And it is a little...
She was in juvenile detention and was basically like she figured out how to hack master technology, and that's why they pulled her along. They're like, Jesus
nobody
Christ,
else
you're
can do
a prodigy.
That.
Yeah. This is a Unix system. I know this.
Yeah. When she's around in the lab, she'll whirl around on rollerblades.
Yeah.
Rollerblades. Even in the broken terrain of the wasteland. We're not sure how physics is going to work in the animated series.
We don't got
to
worry about that. Don't worry about that in animated series.
That's why I'm saying broken doesn't matter. Cracks, rocks, whatever. Inline skates are perfectly fine.
Yeah, they snap on, by the way, in the action figure. You can take them on and off. They got a little peg in the foot. Yeah.
Yep.
We got to figure high out. Tops, right? Like high tops that snap on. Yeah. But the story reason as to why it's like, wait a minute, rollerblades, why would a dog do that? Well, because she is obsessed with master culture. And all she has are bits and pieces from our human history. So it would make sense that she just looks like a hodgepodge of all this weird stuff, and because she just automatically thinks all of it is cool, even if it's like, come on, what are you wearing? You know, it's like it still works. So I'm happy with the way she turned out.
We have a legitimate reason for it, but ultimately it's just because it looks cool.
Basically, everything about Lightning Dogs is let's take a ton of things we like and mash them together to create something that's utterly unique and completely awesome.
And like completely legitimate, too.
Yeah.
Like there's a good reason for it.
It's not all nostalgia.
It's not a spoof.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Like, it's not just a parody of Thundercats. It is not even remotely Thundercats anymore. It's something completely different.
I mean, we have a reason as to what happened to the first team.
Wait,
why the
what about the
is
the
so
dog?
Much more successful.
Oh, Beasthound.
Beasthound.
Oh, yes, Beasthound.
Who's like, you know, Snarf fucking sucks.
So we took a bit, we took away the
Bronx,
ability to speak.
Right?
We took Bronx? About, yeah, we took a little bit of Bronx. We
from, added Gargoyles.
4 bajillion pounds of muscle. That's a rough estimate.
Like there are still wild dogs on this planet,
on
but
Earth,
they haven't evolved
Earth.
The same way these dogs have.
Yeah.
And so Beasthound is one of these dogs that just connected with them.
It's a feral dog. If like, you know, on that show, Earth After People or whatever, where it's like dogs and cats will go into the wild and they'll become like wolves again and just go crazy. Well, in this post-apocalyptic crazy future,
radiation, thousands of years,
and possibly alien technology. it's just a giant dog.
And mix in some magic because Glampire's
maybe,
there.
Maybe, yeah. We'll get to that. But basically, it's just a giant dog.
It's
that,
a furry wrecking ball
that
barks.
Yeah, and they get there and they don't know really what masters really look like. They don't really, they're just looking for ancestry stuff. They see this dog on the horizon that's a really big dog and like, hey, maybe that is someone we can talk to. Hey! And of course, it's just a barking dog that's a wild animal that chases them and they just think it's some kind of beast, hence they
especially
start calling
since
it,
they have cars.
Yeah,
you know?
Since they start calling it Beast Hound. And it becomes like their pet, but it's totally awesome.
And he happens to be there when the Farfetch'd machine blows up.
So he gets
powers
too. Yeah.
I spent a little time dabbling with the concept. We had a concept last time that we came up with of a plant creature that the Lightning Dogs would fight that would be benevolent, like neither good nor evil.
I still feel convinced that we should push that to kind of be some kind of like Captain Planet Fallout thing, like it used to be a Captain Planet entity.
Yeah,
he's a creature with an ecological message for kids,
right?
Who
no,
may
no,
or
no,
may
but
not
but
have
it's
been
like
formed by five
some
teenagers.
Kind of entity that came from the Earth and is now trying to rebuild the Earth in the only way it knows how. And that's just by killing anything that fights plants.
That threatens it, yeah.
That is actually pretty on point for, I think, where all of us are, we're thinking about taking the character, for sure.
Now, I might be off base here, but I got a really cheesy name we could call it. Guy Alpha, or Gaia for short.
Guy Alpha's too, it's too humanizing it. Because the thing that I liked about it was that this thing could look so unhuman, non-humanoid.
I mean, and I mean, imagine this thing wouldn't even respond to a name.
No, but like, I realize
it doesn't
that.
Even think in that way.
It's almost like the I am Groot, where it's just like, what are you? It's like, I'm the Earth.
I'm the woods.
Like, yeah, I'm the woods. Yeah.
Well, I was bringing it up because of, you know, Gaia.
No, I get you. Yeah. Okay. Not making a bad idea.
Just... No, and it's like whatever the lightning dogs would have their own name for him or it.
Yeah.
And it would may or may not respond to that.
Yeah. And I'm sure they would be terrified. It's like because the whole stereotype of dogs peeing on trees, you know, it's like the one place you can't go. It's like, this is a... This is a terrible place we live in.
I'm a tree you won't want to bark up. My bark is worse than your bite.
Damn you, Doug. You leave those puns for me.
Write that down.
In quotes on the action figure box. Just above the blister card.
It'll be there. It'll be like lightning dogs. We never turn tail. And then at the bottom of the blister pack.
Yeah, I remember the original Ninja Turtles packaging, I think, had, like, quotes from a character on it. Or at the very least, it was on the, like, the stupid cutout card where you'd, like, ruin the back of your thing to cut out, I don't know.
Ruin the packaging that the bar, you know, it's like,
I don't know, I've already torn it up, but I don't know. Like, you're saving both parts of it anyway, but you cut one part out when you could have just kept all of it.
I never saved the box. I just played with the toys.
The back had information on it, and the pictures.
I was a fan of the show. I knew all that information.
From here on out, it's a nonstop joyride through the wasteland. We update and expand what's come so far, throw away some ideas that really weren't working. And of course, we needed to lock down the power sets of each of the lightning dogs, and share a ton of wild ideas that had been brewing in our minds in the year between recordings, including new adversaries and allies. First up, we reopen the case file of the Diamond Dogs.
They're the first team.
It'll be revealed in a future episode that they're actually the
first team.
Yeah, because what the lightning dogs assume is they're like, oh, Glampires made things shaped like us that fight like us to try to take us down. Isn't that a trope, you know? And it's like, nah, these were your friends.
Emphasis on were.
Yeah.
The reason that Cap and I were kicking around as to why that worked that way is when the first team ran into the Glampire, they too wound up fighting against him, but were not powerful enough to withstand his abilities.
His sex appeal.
His magic, his power,
the bulge
science.
In his crotch was just far too large for them to deal with.
So when they're retreating, because everything's going, you know...
To shit.
Because
they cannot compete.
Yeah. Dingo, the leader, makes an executive decision without consulting the rest of the crew. He realizes if they get back to the Farfetch, get back to the home planet, there's nothing stopping this bad guy from following them and doing to that planet what he just did to Earth. So he says, no, we never turn tail, and we're going to stick and finish this fight. And he intentionally destroys the Farfetch.
Straight up Stargate.
Yeah. It's
a badass
Stargate,
star over one eye.
They didn't destroy the Stargate.
No, but
that
was originally his plan.
Right. Except now this is... Yeah. It's like, don't destroy the Stargate. We got whatever. It's like, in this one, no, they freaking destroy the Farfetch. Like, there's no way Dingo's going to risk this thing getting loose. And when the Farfetch explodes, because it's using master technology and all this other stuff that they don't know, the wave of energy hits them and they're all... covered in it, and they get their powers.
Dingo has the bark beyond bark. It is a burst of sonic energy that will rip anything to pieces. In fact, one of the concept sketches was him doing the bark beyond bark. It is one of the most badass things that I've continued to try and draw, and is you know, it's a lot harder to draw a barking dog than you'd think and make it look like an awesome picture, because they don't really pose for it, just saying.
Beast Hound gets laser eyes.
Because you need an animal sidekick that shoots fucking lasers out
and
of its
the
eyes.
The action figure can have light piping. It'd be great.
Yeah, the action figure, like, if you squeeze his two legs together, the red eyes light up, you know? Sort of like like the threatening thing. Like, you know when Superman gets really mad and he wants to threaten somebody and the eyes light up for just a second? You go, you know, Superman, I'll do it. Never mind.
A special, like, 12-inch version of the figure, you can actually look through the eyes and it all looks red.
That's how Beast Hound sees the world. Just all red.
Pierre, he's super quick. Which ties in. He's
lightning
kind of
fast.
He's lightning fast. He's a martial arts expert to start with.
You take his martial arts skills and apply the speed to it, then you get a Tasmanian devil of death.
He's not the Flash, you know?
Right.
But, like,
right.
He's maybe the Roadrunner.
It's a good way to put it. Not the Flash.
I mean, not the Roadrunner in that, oh, he's going to run through a solid object. That's crazy.
Right.
He might kick at the last second of the solid object.
And so he can flip off of it. Yeah.
And he, you know, you could probably deliver a pretty powerful punch when you're moving that fast too, because the amount of energy that you gain
built up.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, he won't be breaking the speed of light or anything like that, but he's very fast.
Kid is a technomancer.
Well, that's the, one of the things we still got to figure out. Yeah, we still got to cement that.
We had a lot of ideas floating around about it, and it sounded like we're cramming so much into this character. Yeah. What the hell are we doing?
But the other one that we do know for sure was Angela Bassett Hound.
Yep.
Not her full name. That's just what we call her.
She's got a super snout on her. I mean, she's based off a bloodhound, so she's got that tracking aspect to her. She's kind of a little wrecking ball to begin with. So now
she'll smell you coming a mile away.
And
she's a sharpshooter, so she'll fucking shoot you from a mile away too.
Yeah, she'll shoot you from a mile away, smell your blood, tell you what you had for breakfast. That's like really.
You had waffles and you missed your mom in your last moments. You know what? You're all right. I'll actually bury you.
Kid, Kane, and Nerissa were our most unfinished characters.
They're also the more recent ones to put the finishing touches on.
Kane being a geomancer,
which the one thing that Cap and I were talking about when we were out at HeroesCon was the idea that he would have embarked on a solo mission at one point to sneak into the Glampire's lair, try to pretend to be his ally so that he can master whatever's going on there, and part of the diamondification starts to happen to him.
Oh.
So he's got his right arm is that of a diamond dog.
I could see that happening later on,
because of his resistance, he's able to control it because of the power that it gave him, which he didn't really understand until that point, which is the geomancy power of rocks. Mm.
Now, explain to me what you guys thought about the geomancy. Like, what exactly would his power be?
It's hard to say, because if you say someone's, like, outright, you know, like geomancy, be like, well, like, he's an earthbender, basically. He can, like, you know, throw a rock up. Like, he can have a spike of rock come up in the air or whatever. But I think that might be overpowering him.
I agree.
Though, to tie into that a little bit, is maybe he doesn't understand it at first. Maybe, you know, he knows and he's not playing it because he's a guy who plays his cards really close to his chest. And then once the diamondification...
If we're staging something visually, it could happen so that what Kane won't see, but the viewers would see, would be he's looking for something and the rocks show him something, or like a hole opens up.
More along those lines, I was thinking that the earth bending may have been over the top, and what I'm about to suggest may be not enough.
Right.
My idea, because if he's like archaeologist, sort of master expert, also digging because he's a dog, if he could maybe sense things... buried, like, if for example, if you uncover like a doorway that's like master that used to belong to the masters, he could touch it and have that sort of psychic sense of like something that was here, not necessarily like go back in time and see it.
Pathy, like seismo and pathy,
something like that, where it's like it's the idea where that came from is to extend a power that he already kind of has.
No, I'm with you.
You know, like the bark related, the snout related, everything, with the exception of the laser eyes, pretty much everything is related to dogs.
Yep.
So him, the digging and stuff, and being able to like bury something and remember where it was, not really psychic, but sensitive.
What I want to chip in is that I think a big trend from like 80s and 90s cartoons is you have a power and you develop it over time.
Right.
And so even if eventually he becomes a full-on earthbender, that's going to be like a late game stuff.
Right.
And at that point, he's probably shown that he is a true villain. And so it takes the whole team to take him down.
Right.
I'm not sure that is his destiny.
That might be a plot point.
Yeah. And piggybacking off of that, I was going to say that let's look at it as a spectrum. I mean, earthbending is the end game. Earthbending, that's what his geomancy is going to allow him to do. He starts off with this kind of seismopathy or whatever we're going to call it. I'm with you. I'm piggybacking and I'm developing it along with you.
Okay.
Where he starts that way, he starts to then be able to realize he can actually control the rocks. At this time, he goes on a solo mission, and that's when the crystallization starts to happen, limits his growing power to where now he's back to just that basic understanding of what's going on and control over what shape his arm takes.
Story-wise, that all makes sense. My only worry is, compared to the powers of the other lightning dogs, one guy barks really loud, another girl smells really well, one guy moves really fast, and the other guy has telepathic powers that can move rocks.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, I think if someone can bark really well to the point where it like basically breaks everything, and one person can move fast, maybe to the point where he eventually develops flash speed level stuff, we need to develop something more for Angela.
Right.
Smell which really good.
I picture almost like a daredevil type awareness.
That's what I'm saying.
Anything
for
miles. Yeah. She can feel the most subtle shift.
Almost
in the
like a
wind.
Really good tracker.
No,
she has
exactly.
a bloodhound.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's where it started. That's where we'll just make it so that she has total and complete sensory awareness through her nose.
An observation that I had made myself was that, okay, we have six lightning dogs. Mm-hmm. They're all like a team, sent together. three of them are obviously more soldier class, and the other three are obviously more
civilian class. Yeah.
Civilian class. So there's like a team within a team aspect here. Like there's the people, the specialists who are there to research and report back, because that's what they're sent there to do, and the team who was there to protect them, obviously, and to fight off any bad stuff that happens. So the way the team can break down, like their powers, I don't know if we want to say that it's like an extension of who they already are or what their species already is or whatever, but I don't, what I would not really be too crazy on, at least at this point in time, is having their powers grow to a point where they're basically the Justice League. Like, I don't, because, you know, the thing that makes them really cool is that they have the cars and, you know, they have their own crystal weapons and all of these things. But if
these things need to be good enough to be tools and not be their entire skill set.
Yeah. Right. And I do want to chime in that, like, I thought the lightning dogs, all the lightning powers were supposed to be lightning like, and the geomancy, that's like the exact opposite.
Right. That was two conflicting things that we'd thrown out at one time, actually. And this is something we should really confront, and we might as well do it here. Tony and I realized that we were on different pages about this when we were talking Heroes Con. I thought the Lightning Dogs were always called the Lightning Dogs, and he thought they named themselves the Lightning Dogs after the accident, and or that Glampire had called them that. My thinking was that their team, like any military specialist team might be, was called Lightning Dogs, and via the conceit of, like, it's a cartoon show, they also got, like, these powers via the lightning, and that they weren't specifically all lightning powers exactly. It's just that there's, like, a certain kind of energy that emanates from, like, an energy that was trapped within
it's
them.
It's the Farfetch'd energy, really.
Yeah, when they use it, they'll glow or whatever, you know, or there'll be some kind of, like, visual aspect to
lightning shooting out of their eyes, that sort of thing.
If it's getting real intense, you know.
As far as, like, I love the idea of Pierre getting so angry and moving so fast that, like, lightning starts to form or whatever, but that's more of, like, when he's really pissed off.
So they can reach, quote-unquote, Justice League levels, but at, like, peak
only under
stress moments.
Yeah, only at the worst moment, and never to get them out of trouble. Like, never as a deus ex machina.
With the possible exception, and I wanted to throw out an idea that I just had as to when Dingo develops the bark, when he first realizes that something weird has gone on.
Mm-hmm.
Right after he's destroyed the Farfetch, obviously there's still this entire army bearing down on his team.
Right.
Now, bleeding from a gash over his eye, he sees that his team is first in the forefront. Because obviously, if they were on the Farfetch with him, they would have tried to stop him at least. His first action is to scream at the top of his lungs for these creatures to get back.
Right.
And as he does,
and they
the
do.
Sonic, they do in a big way.
Yeah.
And
that terrifies him, I'm sure.
That terrifies him, that terrifies the rest of the creatures. Perhaps a hole opens in the ground mysteriously, if we're going to stick with this geomancy idea, just completely by instinct. This happens. Mm-hmm. And then Beasttown's eyes can glow laser red and guide the team out to safety. But one way or the other, that image of Dingo's first act after dooming his team to staying on this planet is to protect them with a newfound
power. That's a good drama moment. Yeah.
I think with Kane's power, I think maybe he should be like, I don't have any powers.
I'm
if he's going to be Italian.
Yeah,
like, I don't understand. You guys all got the powers, but, you know, like,
but not that.
Right, not that. And it turns out he does have powers.
No,
just,
and
they're very subtle.
That's how I'm picturing it. How I picture, you know, like this hole opening up beneath them they can attribute
I don't think we should even throw it in that early. Like, people need to, like, not
discover it as they discover it.
Oh, because I really like this moment of him being, like, total full-on earthbender that they have to fight against. That could probably be under the influence of the Glampire. Like, the Glampire basically tempts him, going, like, there's more power in you, but I can unlock it. You can't unlock it yourself.
The idea of him being able to, like, sense things and about the earth, that's all fine and cool. But if he was going to become a full-on earthbender, and if we're going to frame it as saying maybe in a distant story, if he decides to be brainwashed, or if he, not decides, but if he gets brainwashed by Glampire and becomes a villain for a short time, Glampire's powers enhance his powers and he becomes a, you know, whatever badass. But if they end up rescuing him, then his powers go back to normal.
Oh, exactly.
I'm fine with that. It's like, that I don't want him to reach this permanent level of just, like,
godhood.
Yeah, where it's just like, oh no, Glampire's minions are coming. Oh, there's a canyon there now. And then it's just
We don't need that scene from Airbender where the earth boomy just, like, destroys an entire city.
Yeah, we don't.
Because he's that powerful.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with. I really like the idea of Kane having this geomancy. I do think, I mean, it doesn't exactly tie in with the kind of air element that lightning comes from, but in terms of our dogs,
neither does anything else, really.
Nah. So long as his eyes do that little sparky spark, we're good.
But,
I think we're
you know,
covered.
I mean, and with, what, most importantly, it was an idea we had, and it could be interesting, but if we come up with something better, we should go with it.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the character of King Corso then, and just remove it from the dirt geomancy archaeology thing just to see. He's Dr. Kane Corso.
Yeah. Right.
Would he be the team's healer, as it were? Like, would he be, like, you know?
No, because he's an anthropologist.
Then who does what when someone gets hurt?
Well, I mean, any of the soldiers are trained in field medicine.
I picture Angela as like, the main kind of medic-type person, just because she's the toughest nails. I picture her almost as, like, the toughest nails mom
basically,
on the team.
There doesn't need to be someone who is the go-to person. Anyone can grab a medikit off one of the cars and go for it. It's not a video game. We don't need a healer.
I was actually going to say, if there's one person who knows a little bit more, to maybe make it Pierre, because right now he has sort of a conflict going on with Narisa as the technological person or whatever, and since he's more of a soldier guy anyway, plus giving it to Angela Basset Hound would be too... I just like saying it, so please, just let me have this. Giving her the skill of being like the healer, like the mother hen or whatever, would be a little too on the nose, but Pierre being the guy who's like, he'll patch you up and do whatever. And then on top of that, Angela is the more true soldier. She secretly might be like the most badass out of all of them, I think would be.
I don't think that's a secret in the least.
Yeah. But you, well, because like the three of them are soldiers pretty mm-hmm. much on an equal level, except that Dingo's the leader.
Angela's got the most experience.
Yeah, she's like the Raphael, I would say.
Yeah. And so I see Pierre being more the Renaissance dog.
Yeah. He's the soldier who's also a poet.
No, you were talking about Angela having the sense of smell that made her like Daredevil, right?
Yeah.
Well, the proposed power that we had for Narisa was something that we called Blind Shot.
Yeah, that's true.
It was basically a spatial awareness power. It's kind of like she is aware at all times of what's happening around her, which would enable her to know, like, she's an engineer, so she's just got this knowledge of, like, all the car parts. Like, she was already good before, it gets better. She's so aware of what's going on, she can fire a gun behind her and it'll hit something. That may be too amorphous. It might be too weird. Well, then
I think it's too amorphous.
Okay, well then hear me out for this. What if we sort of do a switcheroo?
Okay.
What if Angela is more of the Daredevil? She can smell it, she can sense it, and she's the unbeatable fetch ball, like she can the blind shot, sort of whatever you mm-hmm. want to call it. That's Angela.
Yes. I'm down with that.
And what if we give Narisa something that would be useful to an engineer? And I'll tell you what my pitch is. Something that's useful to an engineer and wouldn't be too out of place as part of, like, the dog thing. It would be more of an extension, but also a traditional power of just, like, X-ray vision. It's like if they're in somewhere, or she's working on a car, or there's something going on, that she, like, the sight might be more of a thing, like a second sight.
I am entirely down with that, and it can even start manifesting itself early as her being able to see the full spectrum of colors.
That could be, oh, shit! Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, all of a sudden, guys, does the world seem more vibrant to you?
Oh my gosh. That would be freaking brilliant. It's like, that. I think that's really cool.
That is cool. There's two things, however. One, I'm really worried about Angela being overpowered. She's already the strongest military character we've got.
Right. Well, then let me explain how I was going to scale that back. Then.
Sure.
So instead of her being like, okay, she's a military badass who can smell you from a mile away. Maybe scale back the length
the
of
range.
Whatever,
like
the range.
Angela can't be the one who can shoot behind her. You know, like the reason I gave that kind of a power to Narisa is because I wanted to make sure that she wasn't going to be the token girl character or Kaylee from Firefly, who's a great engineer, but kind of shitty in a fight, you know?
Right. So then how about this? We do another switcheroo. Keep Narisa with the sight. She could spot traps. She can see for a long way. She can see them coming, you know, whatever. She's almost like the Legolas, I guess you could say. Give the sort of blind shot thing, like the extra sensory thing, to Kane Corso. Because Kane Corso, if he's going to be sensing the earth and sort of stuff like that, that can be, I feel like that's a more natural progression starting point.
Perhaps the only reason that I would say keep the sensory awareness with Angela is I'm not picturing that as something she can tap into all the time anyway. This is the same sort of end game, like nth degree. This is Angela, chips are down, shit's hitting the fan. She's got to use this.
But if the shit's already going down, what use is it going to be to smell something a mile away?
That's when it ties into the everything that's around her.
I think it's weird to have these powers that kind of...
They all have a final smash.
No. Right. I'm okay with the power with the final smash. I'm talking about like the Venn diagram of powers. Like if one person has sensory powers, cool. That one person has sensory powers.
Right, right.
We shouldn't have two people with sensory powers. Because there are so many cool powers we could give people.
Right. Yeah. That's why. So I'm thinking in terms of like what the character is going for. Like Narisa, she's not going to be on the front line. She's not going to be fighting that much. having her have x-ray vision sort of thing and the sight and everything.
We haven't really talked about it. You know, you're saying we have those two crews of people. Well, Narissa is a trained military engineer. There's no reason she couldn't.
I'm not saying she couldn't, but in terms of like, if you're scrapping together for survival purposes,
yeah.
They need her working on the Farfetch if they're going to get out of there.
Or if she's an engineer, then she's like, oh, okay, let me set up a few mortars. Let me set up some traps. And then I'm going to get back to work.
Yeah. I'm not trying to say that she's incapable.
Right, right. She's a military engineer, so she'll set up some traps. She'll be sitting there with her gun right next to her while she's tinkering on stuff. Yeah. She hears stuff. She's at the ready.
She's a military engineer.
Like, I don't see her as a Fortress dog.
Yeah, she may be a military engineer, but Angela is a military
soldier.
Badass. Yeah, soldier. She's a soldier. Yeah, I don't see no reason being like, I can't fight anybody. No. I'm just a girl.
They wouldn't have sent her in this mission.
If she couldn't handle it, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I just want to make sure that all the characters have a certain, you know, balance to them.
Right, that's why I'm still kind of spitballing. But on the idea, so the playing off of that, the idea of her seeing like a more, like, broader spectrum.
Yeah.
By seeing a broader spectrum, does that mean she could also see infrared and ultraviolet? And if so, she could see in the dark.
Oh. Yep.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I like the idea that Narissa, I mean, just tying in with what you were going on, she can just tap into these other spectrums that the rest of the dogs can't.
Can you imagine some like weird scenes with Narissa and Angela like doing these sniper missions where it's like it's pitch black dark and like Narissa says some coordinates and Angela's like, okay, I think I got him, you know?
Like, or even then, it's just like... You put an infrared laser beam on the front of like a laser gun. So the infrared, you can't see it at night, but Narissa can. And Narissa's looking through the thing. He says, okay, aim a little higher, All right, the dot's on him. She's like, are you sure? Because it's pitch black out here. I don't even know what it's like. Just trust me. Your dot's right on him. Just go ahead. And then, oh yeah, he's down. You got him. It's like.
I am entirely down with that.
But what I was going to say is if we're giving one person the sensory, and I'm loving Narissa with developing vision, should we give Angela something else besides smell? I know we love the idea of her with having this smell.
Maybe
but
she's already got decent smell.
I'm up for changing it. Yeah, I'm up for changing
it. Kill your darlings. Like,
yeah. It's okay, so are we cool with Narissa with the vision?
Absolutely.
That sounds neat, yeah.
Okay.
I really like the idea of her just like having developing these.
All right, so we'll table that. And let's try and rework, because we still got King Corso, Kid, and we got to think of a better thing for her, Angela.
I mean, maybe Kid, my mind was going down the lightning path. Mm-hmm. Like maybe she can generate a modicum of electricity.
Kind of like the Doctor Doom movie version. Like he's just lightning
powers. Not
like,
straight up lightning powers, but just enough to like create a spark. Battery. She could generate some power, enough power to do stuff, but not for too long.
Like if you touch her, you get an electric shock. And maybe, that's why she's like rogue and like, don't touch
her. If she carries a bandolier of batteries around with her,
she can charge them.
But it's more that she could like short circuit machinery.
Oh shit.
Which would help.
And she's friends with a robot.
That's where I'm more going.
She is the straight up lightning dog.
If Kid is the lightning dog, could be cool.
Because think about it, we already have kind of been gearing Kid to almost be the mascot. You know, she's the one that doesn't really fit into anything else. She doesn't have any kind of formal training. She's there more as a work release program.
And if you wanted a way to tie this into Mad Max even more, she could just be old Kid later, retelling the story of what it was like living on the planet with the lightning dogs.
And I love the idea of her being relayed this job, like, here, charge the batteries. Like, I hate doing this, and I get really hungry.
And could you imagine
my hair
the
stands
tension?
On end. Do you know how much time it takes
another
to make
thing,
it look like
another
this?
Thing I don't think we explained, Mike, is that you guys, please tell me if it's like, no, I don't agree with that. But the idea that most of the weapons that they use are laser-based, so we don't want bullets and, you know, it's a little violent, you know. So if it's like laser-based weapons and they run out of batteries, it's like, Kid, give me a charge, and it's just like and it's just like throwing it back. And meanwhile, they're getting, you know, overhead.
And
so
Halloween
it's like,
Jack's like, "What you doing there, Reiki?"
Yeah. Like there could be a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun to be had with that.
And
that
there, and
really
of course,
good.
Her like super smash is like an actual lightning.
And
blast.
When she gets really mad, then you know, like
and
a lightning.
We did
thing.
Talk about using the planet's crystals as a resource management.
That was something
thing.
You and I were talking about. Yeah.
And I'm down with that, but perhaps one of the ways that they do that is they retain the energy that Kid can generate.
Yeah. And everybody, that's why the Glampire wants her, because that's turned into Magneto and Rogue again. I'm sorry.
Oh.
On the flip side, who gives a shit?
If we can think of a better way to do it than
in the end, like Glampire, like
he wants them all dead anyway. It doesn't matter.
He doesn't like having her around, he wants to purge this planet.
Right.
Of this like lightning dog scum.
Once they've got the Farfetch'd.
So let's try and get this so we can move on to things like Glampire
or
whatever.
I mean, really, the lightning dogs are an obstacle in the path of Glampire returning to the stars, which he's been trying to do for well beyond the extinction of humanity.
Yeah.
So
that's something we haven't even gotten into yet. So for the time being, we're going to say Dingo Bark, Beastown Laser Vision, Pierre's still quick.
Yep.
Nerissa is going to have the vision
sight
spectrum, which is pretty cool. Sight beyond sight.
We're not going to call it that, but yes.
Yeah, but that's, you get it. Kid is going to be like the battery, energy, just pure energy. She generates energy, basically.
Yeah, she's like Electro.
Yeah, there you go. Kane Corso, we're still on the fence about.
I do like the idea of like maybe...
Static, though. Not Electro, like she's just like, it's very minor.
Yeah,
it's,
right. She's not Storm. She's not going to throw lightning.
I mean, only on like, once again, Smash level.
Like once every three seasons.
Like, I like Kane Corso. I do like the idea of him kind of being able to like see through Earth, being able to kind of manipulate it very minor. And then once he, like, if he gets the crystal hand, he can manipulate that.
Right. So, okay, so let's think of it this way. So if we got, Nerissa's got the sight, and everyone else has got their powers, what's something that would fit in with that that doesn't feel like a version of someone else? Because if you can see through the Earth, well, Nerissa's got whatever. You know,
yeah, what is the, let's think of something else for Kane Corso and for Angela.
Or we could, like, we can, this is, this will be some, you, well, you got
you
something.
Have an idea.
I heard an inspired gasp.
So I was going back to early 2000s, mid 2000s. There's this whole reign of TV shows of like superpowered people. Like, Heroes and 4400 and all that. I'm like, what are the basic powers? And one of them is, of course, being able to see the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking, well, how cool would it be to have someone who has kind of questionable moral, like loyalties, can see flashes into the future?
Hmm.
A guy with one foot in the past can see into the future.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Now, there's no reason we need to like live by this edict, but like, I always want to make it something that'll be a cool action figure.
That's true.
And
that's true.
Whereas the outright geomancy seems like way too much for Kane. The whole thing where he might get a diamond dog arm that like he could like it could turn into like an axe or it could turn into something like something
that
like
is that. A badass action figure.
That's an action figure, and I want to do that really badly. And we got to figure out how we validate that.
You know what we can do? I mean, that can even, because the diamond dogs are going to be able to do that shit. They're going to be able to.
Right.
So we actually hadn't discussed it, but that sounds cool.
I mean, why not? We can have the Diamond Dogs do that, so he can do it on a much more limited scale.
So maybe he does have the power of being able to see in the future, which he may lose at some point.
Or it's limited by, but this way he has something that is unique and different from the rest of the Lightning Dogs that we can still give him badass crystal arm later that will have multiple attachments.
Or he's like, I don't have a power, what the fuck? He actually has a power that he learns right away. And it's the power to hear exceptionally well, which means that he's always privy to anything anyone's saying, and he can manipulate the fuck out of absolutely everyone because he knows what's happening all around
him. Holy monkey.
Done.
It's not much of an action feature for an action figure, but
if he then gets, because he hears how trusts him.
Dude, I just thought of a great thing on that note. Kane Corso can hear things that no one else can hear. That means if he was going to maybe someday talk to Glampire, and Glampire, they're working in cahoots or whatever, Glampire can send out just radio waves that he could hear, but Nerissa could probably see it. She wouldn't know what's being said. She's just like, man, there's someone's, there's
and then,
a thing
and
going
then she
on
talks
here.
To and Kid, and Kid gets the robot to intercept.
Yeah, so like, there's a way that it's like a chess game back and forth where it's like, Nerissa can see there's radio waves, not really, it looks like they're coming from way over, they're miles away, man.
Isn't that the direction? Isn't that Glamp from Glampire?
Yeah, and Kid is like, I can't hack into this. It's like encrypted or something. And then meanwhile, Kane's just like, that's really strange. Yeah, I don't know what that could possibly mean. You know, but he's hearing it all.
And then he slinks off.
Just as an archetype thing. I mean, think about the questionably antagonistic character in these teams. Who do they normally butt heads with? The leader.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a guy who can hear really well, who's going to be abnormally angry at a guy
against
who
the leader.
Yells.
Yeah.
Why is your infernal barking?
No, that's it. I can't. That has to be it.
Yeah, I'm down with that. And then he eventually gets
the hand that he can control because that's a part of the crystallization.
He stuffs the diamonds in his ear so he doesn't have to hear that shit. No, that's great.
I love it. Oh, that just leaves Angela.
Yeah, so Angela. So
Did we just want to make Angela really fucking tough?
I was thinking about that.
Because honestly,
I keep looking, not necessarily to the healing standpoint. She can punch a rock and kind of crack it, you know?
Just really, really tough skin.
I figure Pierre could do that if he's moving fast enough.
No, right, but it's still going to hurt.
Yeah, he's got brittle, delicate fingers.
But she's already so strong to begin with, was the idea.
No, but that's
going to be an enhancement of that.
But by giving her just kind of like this semi-indestructibility, she's still too small to like shield everyone.
But she will run in like a goddamn wrecking ball. Which
that, that could be an interesting dude. That it's if we're going to tug at the heartstrings a little bit, it would be interesting if one of the lightning dogs gets hurt and she was like, I could have stepped in the way. I could have done something, but I'm just too small.
Right.
The thing's going to crush Nerissa and she's trying to catch it, and but it, she just can't do it because she's just too small to do it.
Every time I've drawn Angela, I just picture her bursting through walls. I don't know why.
Like,
just,
maybe that's the reason.
So
maybe
she can have a boost in strength and
just durability.
Durability. Yeah. And it's definitely not she.
And who's the last person you'd want to be even stronger? Well, the firecracker, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's not. She's not so like tough that if she takes a laser beam, she can just deflect it.
Right. Not like that.
It's still gonna burn her.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but most of us have experienced a thick-headed dog where you just watch them run into a wall or something, and then just look at you like, "Did you put that there?"
Yeah.
When the Farfetch'd explodes, like she could, there could be this horrible emotional scene where like. A bunch of rubble falls on her, basically, and Dingo's like, all right, we're out of here. We're smashing this thing. Like, Angela's dead. We're gone. And, like, and then, like, she gets out of it. The Farfetch'd explodes. The lightning goes out, and she tossed this rock over, and she's like, whoa, what's everybody crying about?
No, yeah. Wait. No, that's something great. Something even different, because we've all, I mean, I'm hard on for Dingo getting this eye scar when it all happens.
Yeah.
You mentioned that she's too small to shield someone.
Yeah.
She steps in front of Dingo. Because, like, she, they've
well, I'm
got
talking
this,
about once she has
no,
her power.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. But she steps in front of Dingo. Now, obviously, this isn't going to kill them. But she steps in front of Dingo to try and shield him from the blast. She's too small to stop whatever the hell it is that hits him in the head from hitting him in the head, potentially killing him.
You know, I think that's not a bad idea.
I think, I really like the instead the positioning, like, in order to discover that she's
I think it's better for her. No, that's a good idea.
No, I recognize that her finding that out later would be a better emotional development for the character, right. But I feel like that might be some decent foreshadowing.
I really like the reveal of, like, everything collapses and everyone's like, where's Angela? She's
dead.
God,
yeah,
she's dead.
Oh,
no. She did, and she just busts out. I was like, "What's going on, guys?"
Yeah,
like, I think that's a better reveal.
No, that's a strong reveal, but I like the idea too. Of we've got this soldier who has made it to this point in her career through reliance on her skills and her abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden she's got this catch-all. She can't really be hurt, so she starts to fall off of that. And mistakes are made.
Yeah,
and that's when we get into getting hurt.
Her Achilles
and
heel
sudden,
is her size. And that's something you could never change.
And
so.
she has to all of a sudden, then we go back with this like whole arc of her getting back to form, training back up. She can rope the other two soldiers into it with her because I can't wait to really explore that relationship.
That's yeah, I agree. That
I mean,
because really
I
cool.
just imagine like if you're super fast, you're definitely going to get lazier. Yeah. Like whatever, I'll do that. In 5 minutes. What does it matter? I'm still going to do it three times faster than
you're
you.
You're going to have me run laps there, Angela?
So let's go over this again. We got Dingo has the Bark Beyond Bark.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We got start to get changed. Just say he's got Super Bark. Whatever.
He's got Super Bark.
Mm-hmm. Ultra Bark.
Ultra Bark.
The Omega Bark.
Nerissa has the Awesome Vision.
Spectro Vision.
Spectral Vision. How's that going to be an action figure?
The same way that you...
Maybe
I mean,
she... Maybe
you
click
something
her eyes,
and her eyes change.
Her eyes change.
Maybe her eyes
again.
Light up white. I don't know. Are we dealing with present technology or 80s technology?
Yeah, I don't know, yeah.
King
Dude,
Corso,
some of these new toys coming out are pretty badass. Yeah. You know, anyway, so...
King Corso has the hearing and then eventually the arm. Kid is basically a battery.
Yep.
Beast Hound has a laser vision.
Just and, because fucking cool.
Yeah.
Angela
is strong.
Strong, and Pierre has the speed. And that's...
That's lightning dogs, yeah.
That's, to me, the two key, like, if we didn't have a strength and a speed, then I'm like,
right,
we're missing out on something, because strength
right,
is also
gotta,
another
yeah.
pillar of superpowers.
Yeah.
I am so very happy right now.
Oh, one thing we did not address, Wolfman. Before they meet any bad guys, you know, before they're just like, oh my gosh, this place is barren, there's no masters, you know, this is terrible. They're able to pick up on a radio wave, something that sounds like Wolfman Jack, who's just like, I'm listening to the beats of this time and, you know, listen to like some, and here's some rock and roll to cure your soul. And they're like, that, what? And so it's like, if you want to make a request, call in our live hotline. And somehow they're able to hack in and be like, who is this? They're like, you're talking to the Wolfman. And they're like, Wolfman.
Somebody's calling, what?
They're like, Wolfman? Like wolf and man? And maybe this is something to do with the masters? Where are you? And it's just like, oh, I'm located at the whatever booth. And they're like, we got to get to him. So they fly out on their hot rods or whatever.
American
just, or
graffiti
on foot,
style.
Yeah, whatever. They get there and it's like a little small building somewhere and they kick open the door and then leads down a staircase. And like, where does this go? And they flick on the lights and it's just a massive underground server room. And they're like, Wolfman, are you in here? He's in his little blinking red light. Yeah, I'm here. What's up? And they're like, what? Where are you? Are you in this box? He goes, what are you talking about? I am the box. So Wolfman basically was back when humans were still around. was just an artificially intelligent radio disc jockey based off of, obviously, Wolfman Jack. Because in the future, why do you need somebody to sit in a booth and request music and play it when 24 hours a day you can just tune in? It's the same awesome personality all day long.
Take all the classic radio personalities.
Mix them into one thing, yeah.
Or no, just like different stations.
Yeah, you just yeah, so for this each station.
Just,
yeah.
This just happens to be the Wolfman Jack station.
Yeah, and it just missed the bombing. You know, it's the only one that's still around, and it's just like, yeah, it's been really boring out here with the Wolfman. Nobody's been calling in for a long, long time.
You're the first caller in. Well, I've stopped calculating.
Yeah, yeah. So he's the only link that they have to what the Masters were like, what culture was like. So, of course, Kid is talking to Wolfman all the time. She's just like, can you tell us like about, like they find a calendar and it's like, wow, what happened back in the year 2159 on April the 7th? On this time, is like,
oh, I played this song.
I played this song. The traffic was backed up pretty bad that day. Well, they had a storm clouds coming in through the, you know, to the east, and
a caller broke up with her boyfriend, so she wanted me to play a fuck you song.
Yeah, and but later on the day after that, we had someone calling in for a marriage proposal. It was really sweet. It's like, you know, it's like, that's not really what I wanted to know. Well, fans like, well, that's all I got for you.
That's kind of neat, because actually, I this is the first time I've heard this origin for Wolfman, because in the past we talked about him being a composite of scientists, artificial intelligence.
That was one idea. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like in the base.
This is
interesting because this is an early adventure the Lightning Dogs get to have, and then like out of sympathy for this AI, Kid can like harvest him from his server room, bring him back to the base, and all of a sudden you have an AI that's not just set up to tell the Lightning Dogs everything because it's been in the base all the time. It's discovering the base too. They can install on the main computer because it's like a personality. So this Wolfman persona can grow with them instead of already being birthed to the show fully grown.
Wolfman. Glampire's on his way. We got to get back to base. Alert the team. All right. Now, do you want some chase music while you get your way back there?
That's great. I'll play a groovy tune for you to drive home to. It's like...
Because it's a golden earring.
On a highway to the danger zone. Because the idea was that it was very rock and roll infused was the inspiration for everything Lightning Dogs. But the idea I was going to have is for like a drama moment. Because you think Wolfman's kind of a funny guy. There's really no drama with that. He's not a human. He doesn't have any emotions. But he definitely roots for the Lightning Dogs. And if he's like in the base, he'd be like, attention Lightning Dogs, we got the incoming Glampire thing. And they're like, oh, and they go run to their stations. Kane Corso can hear, you know, radio frequencies and whatnot. If somehow they're out there somewhere and Kane Corso's in the lab doing something, Wolfman's just like, Dr. Corso, we got a question for you. About this, whatever. And he's just bullshitting with him for a little bit. And he's just like, Wolfman, just leave me alone. He's like, all right, fine, I'm sorry. Sorry I bothered you. Several episodes later, there'll just be a really tense moment where he's getting radio receiver from like Glampire or whatever, and he's, you know,
hey, Dr. Corso.
And it's just like, hey Doc, we've been getting these strange radio signals. You know anything about that? And he's just like, I wouldn't know any, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, well, you can hear me right now, can't you? And it's like, oh Wolfman, you're it's like I don't know what you mean, Wolfman. It's like, well, no, and I would this ain't on the loudspeaker. It's just you and me, Doc.
I'd love to almost flip that a little bit afterwards, saying,
not listening to any other radio stations, are you?
Yeah, you ain't listening to any other radio stations.
You don't need no smooth jazz.
You're keeping it locked here. Wolfman Jack,
you're keeping it locked in, the Wolfman. That's just that moment of where
at the same time, maybe he's saying that to keep Kane off his scent. That he knows what's going on
at first,
he's No, and then at the same time, he's like flashing a message on his screen for Kid to see, since Kid was the one who rescued him,
right? Or, you know, any of this stuff. And then, of course, just like, you know, the idea that Wolfman can know that Dr. Kane Corso is up to no good and just traps him. So it's like the idea, everything that bounces back to Kane Corso is a mind game of just like manipulation,
dog and mouse, if you will,
dog and mouse, yeah, cat and dog, yeah.
All right, Glampire.
Glampire. Yes, okay.
The villains are underdeveloped.
Well, we only just barely topped off the main cast, you know. So, so Glampire.
Yes.
Now.
Oh, he's in the room.
Should we just interview you in character? Like,
should we have, okay, so how many
once
types?
Once upon a time.
How many types? Like, I know he has the Diamond Dogs from Minions. I know also the
Halloween Jack.
Halloween Jack is his, Halloween Jack is his right hand.
Here's the thing about Halloween Jack. Halloween Jack is just, it's a Bowie joke, right? Halloween Jack is a real cool cat. He lives on top of Manhattan Chase.
Which is where, as it turns out, Halloween Jack lives.
if we want to set this in New York, which personally I don't want to. I don't want to,
but whatever, it doesn't matter.
Even fucking Oblivion was set in New York, and that was like...
Well, we can call it Manhattan Chase. It doesn't matter.
We're not naming it after an actual Manhattan Chase.
We're naming Halloween Jack after that line. We don't need to attribute his entire origin story to David Bowie. That may be plagiarism. I'm not sure. Halloween Jack represents the first level minion that any big
right
bad
I was gonna say
out.
Like we needed like more of those because not to reflect to our origins, okay. But
right, so now here's the thing I was thinking about Halloween Jack and the minions or whatever, because every time we talked about them they were very humanoid, right. Almost like the ghouls, right. From Fallout.
Exactly, which is another, but basically I don't remember the guy's name in Power Rangers. There's that blue dog faced guy in the gold suit, Goldar, and Goldar controls the putties, right? That's where Halloween Jack is. He's working for Rita Repulsa. He sends out the putties.
Perfect.
Right. He leads a biker gang of basically Mad Max things.
Zombies.
Thugs.
But
can they all be Halloween themed?
That would be fucking amazing. But here's the problem. Halloween Jack, he just ends up being a ghoul from Fallout, as do the other people. Right. Because in theory, this world is actually populated by freaks and mutants, and those humanoid ones just tend to be like ghouls.
See, I envision more... are you guys familiar with Darkstalkers at all?
Yeah.
I imagine more of a Lord Raptor.
And Lord Raptor's awesome, but I just mean, like, we're still dealing with the zombification of humans.
That, like, it should be gone for thousands of years.
Like that's why I'm saying more, like, skeletal or more...
Right, but if...
I think Cap's getting to something that we were talking about.
The problem is, if these are preserved, mutated, altered humans, the ghouls in Fallout...
Are
alive and can, in some degree, remember what it was like to be human, because they're very old. And that's sort of the position we've put ourselves in. If these things used to be human, then... That presents a problem for us because part of the Lightning Dog's emotional connection to the Masters is the fact that they don't exist.
And there's nothing. The only thing they can reach that's human are
architecture, media, cars,
things they
and
find.
Shit. Yeah, now, and that's important to make sure that they are always kind of wanting to experience their de facto gods or their origins and so on. Like a want for them.
An answer for that.
Bum, bum, bum.
Vampire comes to Earth way back when, does his thing. Earth is over. Whatever force he invaded with are probably of alien origin as well.
Oh.
What if this alien invasion force is kind of Skrull-ish, where they just say, hey, this world we just destroyed, we're going to live like people now because, man, that was kind of cool.
Going off of the Skrull idea, to ready the invasion.
They came first or whatever?
And they were able to blend in.
Well, here's the thing. This is actually contrary to the origins of Glampire that I thought we'd had established.
Right, that's what I mean. We still need to get to that. I don't want to trample on all
okay,
that
so
stuff.
What was the origin of Glampire?
Glampire was exiled to Earth as a prisoner. In Glampire's mind, Glampire is a hero. He's Che Guevara of his planet.
Right.
And he was chucked to Earth like, oh, fuck you, go to this backwater planet. And maybe he was even a good guy. Maybe his rebellion was the right thing to do for his planet. Doesn't matter. His species lives for a really long time. He failed in his attempt to overthrow that society. He got thrown to Earth a long time ago, maybe 20th century, maybe a little earlier, and has been existing there throughout. And what he's been looking for is he's been watching and waiting, growing in power and doing all this stuff, like just, you know, being a celebrity, getting his kicks, doing whatever he needed to do to bide his time, because humanity's technology was hundreds of years away from what he needed to return to the stars and try to save his people.
But when you can live forever, you know, just waiting.
What's a couple centuries?
Yeah.
But the problem is that as soon as humanity had really achieved that level of technology, they destroyed themselves in a nuclear war.
Right.
So Glampire becomes a master of nothing.
Like, so, now, I really like that origin. I had a different one in mind.
Okay.
I don't know if it's better. It's just, it was more the idea of him. He came from outside, whether he was banished here or not. But if he came and with him, he brought the putties, if you will, or whatever, the ghouls, whatever you want to call them, that become the Halloween Jack and the gang.
Zero-level minions.
Yeah, zero-level minions that maybe they have a little bit of shape-shifting sort of thing. Like, maybe they're permanently green, but they can just sort of take human form. But, like, in the countless of other planets that he's conquered or whatever, this is very much changing Glampire, so please feel free to dismiss it. But
I do have some... I have been completely, by happenstance, sketching these sort of punk rock pumpkin head guys. What if one of the reasons Earth is so pissed is Glampire has perverted aspects of this mutated vegetation?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And that mutated vegetation is where Halloween Jack ties in. And Halloween Jack, perhaps, is one of these punk rock, pumpkin-headed bastards.
Before you get into that, because maybe the idea was Glampire is trying to gather up like the crystal stuff, because mm-hmm. the crystals are infused with whatever technology, and this is going way back. We're going to have to discuss this. This will be a whole other episode talking purely about backstory. But I thought, what if humans in our future, but in the distant past of this story, they're able to artificially grow these new kind of crystals for energy. It mm-hmm. like solves the energy crisis. We come into a new era of energy
peace
is great.
And prosperity.
Peace and prosperity. And everything is great. We explore the stars
and explode the world.
And we invent the Farfetch'd and we go to different planets. And hey, you know what? Through the distant telescopes that we can see and the ways that we can measure things, much like how Narissa can see different types of energy, you can see on a distant planet that maybe is uninhabited, hey, crystals that we're making artificially naturally grow there. So let's get there and get more powerful crystals and be able to do whatever. And then, so we build a Farfetch and we go there and people build a colony there to farm the crystals and they bring their dogs.
That's great. Yes.
And
yes.
The crystals have energy powers that enables them. So once humans abandon that planet, the crystals will help the dogs can age and evolve much faster. So that, because I remember thinking the idea that, oh, we want it to be like, you know, thousands of years of evolution for dogs to go from being regular dogs to being like walking on two legs and talking. How does that happen that quickly if we still want to have like burnt out buildings and cars and stuff driving around? I'm like, well, what if it really is only a few hundred years, maybe 1,000 years, but for 1 year for a dog, it's 7 years for a dog. So 1,000 years for Earth is 7,000 years for a dog.
God damn it, Doug.
And of course, who knows about the rotations of the planet?
Yeah, and who knows about the planet rotation? Yeah, all this can anyway. The dogs grow up on that planet. Just the crystals are a part of life. That's they don't need fossil fuels. They don't need whatever. Mm-hmm. They just throw a crystal in it and it's going to work. So they get to
Got
Earth.
A problem? And throw a crystal at it.
Yeah. Now that's oversimplifying it, but you see what I'm getting at. They get to Earth and the crystals are growing here. Blah 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 blah. That the crystals are a sort of thing that ties everything all together as an energy source, also for weapons, for vehicles, whatever. Anyway, tying this all back to Glampire. If Glampire gets to Earth, whether he decides to invade Earth with his minions because he wants to conquer the planet because he sensed that there were crystals here, but they were artificial crystals, they weren't really that good. Humanity gets destroyed fighting Glampire, or they blow themselves up. We'll decide that later. Either way, Glampire, in order to try and get back to the stars, he needs to grow these crystals. The downside is that for the crystals to be naturally grown and for them to be really powerful takes a freaking long ass time for them to grow, even for Glampire. Mm-hmm. You can make an artificial crystal that might power a phaser, but it's just not going to last very long. But for you to use serious power to do something like a Farfetch, has to grow naturally. So he could be growing a crystal farm somewhere in the glass canyons where the spiders are. Maybe the spiders are tasked with, you know, overseeing the farms of crystals here. Part of the reason why he can get angry and discovers the lightning dogs is that they accidentally destroy a field of crystals, or they say, oh, before they even know what Glampire is, they go, look, all the natural growing crystals are here, not like all these artificial shit. Well, let's just take these, because they think they're just naturally growing somewhere, and kill off a couple crystal spiders, because they're like, eh, that's kind of weird, what the hell is that? Start getting back to the Farfetch, and Glampire's like, where are my crystals?
Like you motherfuckers.
Exactly, like they just ruined hundreds of years of planning in an instant, and now he's going to try and hunt.
And killed some spiders.
And killed some spiders. You don't
Peter
kill those
Rabbit
spiders.
Moment when the farmer comes home and he's like, oh, you miserable little buddies.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to make this all about energy conserving this and, you know, like, oh, who's got the energy? Oh, they got the crystals.
But if those crystals are what Glampire wants,
right?
By taking those, that immediately puts you number one on Glampire's shit list.
Not only that, but they happen to destroy a link back to other natural growing crystals.
Exactly.
And he's just like, congratulations, I had a shit list. You guys got promoted. You were down at the bottom. You're at the top.
So the reason why I went on this whole big tangent is a way to tie in First of all, crystals, they were there before because just, hey, crystals, why not? So let's make them part of a story. That was my attempt at least to try and figure out a logical reason for having them.
Okay.
Why the dogs would know how to use them, how they're crystal-powered weapons, blah, 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 blah. But also how to tie Glampire into it. Why does Glampire care? Like, what is it about them if it's, oh, lightning dogs are here. Well, screw them. They're good guys. Like, well, no. What did they do? You know, how could he try to use them?
Or and we can merge what Cap was saying. It's not that he was exiled. It's not that he was. He had to retreat. Whatever fight he was fighting on his home planet, he was losing. So he wanted to regroup, find a place to become more powerful. His entire race lives for a long ass time. So it was a couple centuries of suffering if he can come back and free them for the next 3 millennia.
Especially if he goes quiet for a couple millennia.
Couple centuries, yeah.
Couple centuries. No one's going to think that he's going to come back.
Exactly. Spreads a rumor that he's dead. He comes with a small contingent of creatures.
Maybe it's because I came up with it, but I like the sympathy that you could garner for Glampire in a way of him being exiled.
I like that too.
I do too.
I'm not saying that we remove the sympathy. We can still play up the sympathetic
like
aspects.
If he got here, even if he crashed his ship, that's like, oh, I got there. I could come back. Sure. Why not? Instead of like, oh, no, we're dumping you here. This place is shit by comparison to our technology. You know.
Here's a question about that, though. If you're an evil guy and they dump you, it's like, we're going to dump you on a planet where you have a vast amount of knowledge over these people. You could be their god. Goodbye. You know, it's like that. I don't think they would do that. But if he's a good guy and this is his punishment for trying to like overthrow bad guys or whatever, that would be a little bit different. Where if he's here for like a couple hundred years before technology really rises, which I really like that idea. But I'm trying to think of how that ties into Halloween Jack and everything else. Because really, the problem that started this whole tangent was Halloween Jack. Yes,
so, Hex. These bad guys, whatever this minion-level villains, have to be easily replaceable.
Right.
Because as lightning dogs destroy them,
they
got
to show up in every episode.
Like putting
they have
the
to show
clan.
Up in every
right.
episode.
So this is why I'm pushing back on the whole maybe like, a not reincarnated, but just like, basically skeletons put together, like put a pile of bones into a machine.
You know,
it comes out as some kind of weird Halloween creature that.
Oh, that would be great because you take a pile of human bones, show them to an alien. Are they really going to put together a man? We got no idea whether or not dinosaurs.
If they're a spacefaring alien species and they have all the human bones, they could probably figure it out.
No,
we can't use dinosaur bones because we don't have all the dinosaur bones.
Who's to say? Because we have these aliens who are using the bones of the masters. But it looks nothing like what we would consider what the lightning dog's history shows. Because there's nothing that really separates one of our arm bones from one of our leg bones.
All right.
The hip could go on the head.
We want these wacky motherfuckers to look like some kind of Halloween abortions, right?
Yep.
Okay. I think the answer is that they are a whole race of mutants. Maybe some of their gene code stems from humans. Maybe. It doesn't matter. One of our characters we introduced in a prior episode was a big fucking turtle covered in junk. Like, so...
We're overthinking it maybe then.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so these things, they don't look like spiders. They don't look like mummies. They don't look like any other kind of Halloween garbage. They look like all of it smashed together. And each one looks a little different. They're all just a bunch of wacky garbage. And you know, the lightning dogs might find like a village of them sometimes, and they'll be like, oh, whoa, like we're like, they're ready to fight, and they're like, this is a mom and her kid, they're just fucking disgusting, you know, like
I like the idea that they are Halloween abortions.
Now, you know, you see, it's a cool idea. The problem with making every single one of them unique, it'll be a pain in the ass for the animators.
Sure,
and
sure.
How are you gonna make toys out of that?
No, I mean, you're not. But like, you design 5 punk shapes and they got helmets on, right? You know, but like, you get close to one, oh, it's furry and black with these big fucking spider eyes, or this one's Cyclops with like with no jaw, you know?
Maybe there's, like you were saying, 5 different like classes of these kind of like Halloween abortions that they all kind of stem from these 5 different designs.
I love
designs.
That's catching on.
Like, no,
it sounds to me, it's Halloween again, Jack and his. It's Halloween Jack and
it
his.
It sounds
abortions.
A lot like we're describing the different classes of enemies in Left 4 Dead.
Well, I was and more thinking, once again, just going back to our source material, I was thinking of how, like, there were the toads, the hyenas. What? They had those 5 guys who were the 3 or 4 guys that were the leaders, and they had their own minions. So Halloween Jack could have, like, his 3 or 4, like, I'm the vampire guy, or I'm the bat guy, or whatever. And so, and then they have their own clans behind them. And Halloween Jack has to, like, act as the peacemaker between these stupid clans.
I mean, he runs a gang. Like, it's really disassociated. Basically, these people are Huns. Like, right. They're
no, no, no. And when I say peacemaker, I mean, he just has to make sure they're not fucking killing each other that day.
Yeah. Hey, guys, break it up. Maybe don't bust each other's heads up.
The lightning dogs are out there, fellas. They're out
that's,
there.
That's what I mean by the peacemaker. Right. Like, these four or five different clans fucking hate each other. And it's up to Halloween Jack that they don't kill each other before the lightning dogs.
They hate the lightning dogs more. And to tie into what you said about, you know, we're describing the different classes in Left 4 Dead, that kind of cultural shorthand isn't a bad thing.
Oh, I don't know. They all look like, if we're talking about these Halloween creatures, right? They all are so freakish. And in theory, like, if we were able to extend a budget to this show where everyone would look differently, they would be so freakish that their wars are regional. They're not about physical deformities or whatever, because they're all scrambled, mutant nonsense.
No, so, I am looking forward to, I mean, just the idea of a Cyclops without a jaw.
Until we nail that down, feel free to draw any of this stuff, and we'll see if something actually pops off the page.
You know, I think the interesting thing about these, we need to not call them ghouls, right? Like, we gotta come up with a snappy name for them.
That is not abortions.
That's not Halloween abortions, yeah.
I would love to see that on a toy box, though. I'm not going to lie.
But please name your punk rock band Halloween Abortions. It opens up the possibility of, like, remember, all the He-Man characters are like, I'm a guy with the long neck, or like, I'm a guy with the fucking claw hands, or like, you know, shit like that. We're just creating a whole society of that shit, or like, right. Like with the Ghostbusters action figures, I'm a football player, you bend me over, and there's a fucking monster in my back, you know?
Well, let's circle around to that, because there's a couple of the ones that I think Cap and I had talked about that not everyone else talked
Mutant
about.
Mutant League football.
Yeah. Do you remember the Queen?
Queen Bitch?
Queen Lich.
Oh, right, Queen Lich, yeah. What happened was that I was just making another stupid David Bowie joke, and Doug was like, oh, Queen Bitch. Well, we can't say that. Like, so let's say Queen Lich. And I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. Okay. So there's a flowchart I published in September of last year that Doug created. Maybe you guys caught on to it. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on there. I've barely spoken with Doug about most of this, and we didn't talk about any of it.
For a year, yeah.
So we got things you might know from other episodes on there. We got Captain Scrap, the turtle we talked about. We got Nagel, Glampire's androgynous
robot assistant.
We got Space Boy, the kind of Johnny Quest sort of space terror sort of character. Then there's some kind of like bizarre demon thing. It just has a bunch of question marks. There's a plant thing, which has a picture of man thing. Ninja cats from Japan, question mark.
I have to explain that. Yeah.
Samurai pizza cats.
Antarctica robots, question mark.
These were all things we talked about, by the way.
I know.
Bad masters from a forgotten human colony. And then Queen Lich. So, Doug, this flowchart.
Let's see where to begin. Well, Queen Lich.
I really like Queen Lich.
Wait till you hear. The idea was that we were trying to think of just like other villains for this world, like other types of you know, evil characters and whatnot. And somehow, we both hit upon this idea of the Queen Lich. I'm sure if we look back far enough, we could find the text messaging back before we did. Where if I'm going to try to remember the idea that we had, she was a human. Back when things were going real bad, she was a scientist, like a brilliant scientist, and the world's going to shit, and she was brilliant in like nanotechnology and trying to outdo whatever was going on.
It was life extension by virtue of cybernetics and so on.
Yes, because a lich, because how would you define a lich? Like life extension by the death of...
Lich is an undead entity.
Yeah. Right?
They're
fully cognizant. They're not a zombie.
Right. They basically like seal their soul somewhere,
right,
to magnify their own powers beyond death.
That's kind of what we were going for with that, except she does it with technology, right. Or rather she did with technology,
like sealed her soul into a data disk,
cybernetics and biological enhancements. At this point, basically she's been swapping parts
she's
of
not
her body.
Flesh she yeah. is not human. She looks human, but there's not a piece of her that's human. She's not a robot. I'd say we could even take it so far as to say that she's just a cloud of nanoparticles that sit together and just become a human.
So she's Cher.
Cher? Oh, whatever.
That's why I just ignore Tony.
If she's just a cloud of nanoparticles that look human, she may have the memory of what it was like to be a human, but she's just, her sympathy is gone for other humans, you know? And if she was a potential, I don't want to say love interest for Glampire, but definitely there's a thing there where Glampire is basically king of the world right now. And she could be his undead queen, totally. But she's obviously got a lot of questions to do with, like, this is literally the guy who destroyed humanity or was somehow responsible. Or maybe he wasn't, depending on what backstory we go with.
And that's where the undead army is. Okay, I was, for some reason, I had locked in my head, I need to have an undead army somewhere
right.
here.
You could put something like that in there. I don't know, but we didn't take it as far as, like, if she has an army or anything like that, or whether she's just a super powerful being that has no allegiance whatsoever.
And I'm personally not sold on the nanomachines thing. I envision her as this, like, she's a little robot. She's genetically engineered parts of her. So she's like, oh, lightning dogs, these anthropomorphic dogs might be onto something. I'll get myself a dog head. Or, you know, like, every time you see her, because she'd be like a special, like, not consistent character, she'd be every now and then. She'd be completely different. It'd be like how Baxter Stockman in the Ninja Turtles cartoon from 2003, eventually, like, he started getting, like, parts of his body removed, and every time you saw him, he was a little less human.
Oh.
She's the start of
more,
the Borg.
Wait, maybe she's more like Brainiac. She's already uploaded her own conscious. Like, yeah. Her own conscious is on a computer.
Yeah.
And when you see a robotic whatever, it's not really her.
Kid's robot sidekick. That we have established.
Nades, we're getting to that. That could
okay.
be that.
Okay, I actually found the conversation.
Oh, go for
so,
it.
By
go
some
for
strange
it.
Miracle.
Yeah.
Okay. It's August 26th. For lightning dogs, Queen Bitch, a super obvious Bowie reference, some kind of canid that Glampire's mind controlled, or who is simply evil and takes on an absurd title as part of his court.
Lol, would that work for a kid's cartoon?
I don't know. That's the odd question of what exactly is lightning dogs?
Could always soften it to Queen Witch if needed. Glampire plus Queen Witch has a nice ring to it. Maybe in more ways than one. Lol.
Winky
and
face.
I get booed.
This is a private text message. Not anymore.
And
yeah.
I said, LOL, that'll work. And then genius struck.
Or Queen Lich.
Ooh, good one.
Of course, the technology wasn't perfect, so now she's a lich instead. And instead of magic, or her being a wizard, she used to be a human scientist who became immortal because of some advanced form of technology. And then you say,
dude.
And then I say,
and then I said, LOL. What if one of her, quote, powers is that she keeps, quote, upgrading herself and frying her genetic code in weird ways? Oh, that was it. That was more of a biological thing.
Yeah. I said, she can't be too robotic, but I think there's something there.
Not robotic, genetic. Surgery and chemicals.
Yeah, like the bad guy from Hellboy, the guy who, like, cut himself, that had the surgical addiction. So imagine she has a surgical chemical addiction.
Mm-hmm.
She has this addiction to keep
right.
perfecting herself to the point where, like, she has this constantly changing goalpost.
So then I say to Cap, yeah, I know what you mean. Just that her goal should be to somehow regain some of her humanity, not just be a better dead thing.
Ah, so she's actually dead, not just lich-like. Gotcha.
So, I mean, because it's like, imagine she is constantly altering herself, genetically altering herself, surgically altering herself, chemically altering herself, to the point that she realizes she no longer has a soul. She no longer feels empathy. She no longer is human.
She barely remembers what it was like to be human in the first
right.
place.
Right. And so at that point, she's trying to find that humanity. She can't.
It's impossible.
Right. Yeah. She doesn't find it in the Glampire. She doesn't find it
and
in
it's
the
just, it's
mutants.
Ironic because.
And then she finds it in the lightning dogs.
Man's
say,
best friend.
You could say the thing is that if she doesn't like Glampire, but the irony is that he's the only one who either could A, understand her, B, help her, or C, even remember what the fuck a human was like.
I mean, you know. I imagine, like, maybe she was on this path. She found Glampire and then decided, I want to be like that. Took
Could
some
be.
Wrong turns. And then now she kind of, like, mentally blames him for losing
yeah,
track.
I had this image of her being the pseudo love interest where maybe it's not, maybe they're not love interest, maybe they are. But just the idea of that she has no problem hanging out in Glampire's castle every now
right.
and then.
Now, yeah,
just to chat.
They're just really flirty and weird.
Yeah, it's
right,
weird.
Like, she still blames him, but that, I mean, who else is she going to talk to?
Exactly. Like, maybe, you know what? If Glampire is a guy who's been on Earth for a couple hundred years before things went to shit, and it became revealed that he's an immortal being, maybe she was a scientist who was trying to study him, sort of like a Harley Quinzel situation. And she kind of wanted to, I don't want to die. I want to live
with
you.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
you know, and he's just like, what do you want from me? I can't, you know, he's not really a vampire. He can't bite her. You know?
So part, like she did take, maybe he gave her some DNA samples and that's what took her down the wrong path.
Maybe. But we're going into like world building here,
right.
like serious world building that may not be perfect for
but
right now.
But I love
now.
The idea of someone who's like, she's part human, part machine, part whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then constantly, quote unquote, improving upon herself.
But she doesn't have it. No pun intended. She doesn't have a dog in this fight. It's like, so she doesn't really, you know.
But the only reason she pursues the lightning dogs is because she sees those traits like empathy.
Right, right.
That she doesn't
They're
see
clearly
in the
good
mutants.
Guys.
Right,
yeah.
And that's what she longs for. And so she might
and
like...
And she'll cut it out of them.
Right, yeah. Exactly. She'll experiment on yeah. them.
On the graph here, I also got Nagel, the sort of the robot. I was trying to think of what his purpose is instead of just being like, I'm a waiter and I'm here to serve you, Glampire.
He's the sort of guy, he whispers in, you know, Glampire's ear. He's like a vizier in some ways.
Right. Like, if his purpose was to sort of keep him updated on everything, but I'm like, but why a robot? Like, why in a robot that looks like a human and whatever?
Because it could have been a gift from Queen Lich.
Maybe. But I thought, like, what's his purpose there? And then we talked about the robots in Antarctica sort of possible scenario as being like another huge army of stuff that's
a threat down the road.
A threat down the line. This is all down the line.
Right.
But what if a weakness that Glampire has, because he clearly freaks and the genetic things, he is a living creature of some kind. What if with all of his powers, robots can get the drop on him? Oh. He can't sense robots. He can sense if someone walks in the room, sort of vampire-ish. He can sense human bodies and everything else. But if an assassin robot were to climb up onto the ceiling like a spider and then drop down, he wouldn't know until he saw it.
Or if
heard
there was
it.
An army of robots at
right.
the doorstep,
he wouldn't know
unless someone reported.
Unless you had a robot on your side, and that's Nagel. And Nagel's the one
Excuse
who's able to...
Excuse me,
you
sir.
Know, yes.
There's someone at the door.
Well, now, Nagel's on Glampire's side, so he would tell him, oh, you know, there's something approaching, or... Master, watch out!
Just,
you know, and
just,
shoot at the ceiling or whatever. And I thought it would be a really cool idea that the robots in Antarctica are against Glampire. They would never work for him. They kind of have their own agenda, but every once in a while, maybe once a month, they send an assassin robot to go kill Glampire, but it always fails.
Because he's sitting on the biggest power source.
There you go. And they're stuck in the Antarctic.
They're synthetic beings with very little resources.
The only resource you could have in the Antarctic besides snow might be sunlight, because the days last 6 months out of the year, but you also got 6 months of darkness.
Right.
So
at that point, they
go into low power
everyone.
Mode. They go into low power mode to conserve until the next year comes around. So that was my idea of tying in Antarctic robots with, you know, whatever. And the idea of the Antarctic robots is that the robots don't have to look like people. They can look like Transformers however they want. Like,
right.
It's a machine. They can do whatever they want. They send them out to do whatever of any size. A lot of fun there. What do we got here?
A few freak designs.
Tony's just designed some new creatures here.
These are hot off the presses, ladies and gentlemen.
Obviously, there'll be a link to this in the concept art gallery on this episode's page.
Yeah, I like the sort of monster concept. Halloween abortion sounded too
well. What
harsh.
I took from that is that we're just kind of combining different Halloween creatures. And one thing that I kind of stumbled on that
punk rock road warrior Halloween monsters. That's really
and
what's...
one thing that I really like the idea of is I mean the first their primary mission in coming back to Earth was to you know find out what they could about the masters, but also find out what was going on. So that one down there in the bottom left hand corner. Has
like a bat
these
spider or something
bat
like that.
Spider or but from a distance what would that look like? That looks like some tall ears, perhaps
or
a lightning
a
dog
or yeah
perhaps a lightning dog or mm-hmm. another one of the dogs. So bit of like, hey, you know, we're here to find and
right
and turn around and all of a sudden
there's something to that. I think there's something to that. The question is like, where do they come from though? Were they people that have mutated or are they like what, you know, are they animals that mutated?
They're
like, consciousness?
They're a little bit everything. They're a genetic slurry.
So that's why I'm kind of wanting to we'll go over the rest of the
they
of
crawled
the
out from the
stuff.
Nuclear muck.
Right. Because this is such a weird I'm liking it. It's just such a weird thing that we can't really, how do you pin it down sort of thing?
Much like the lightning dogs, they're creatures that, you know, they evolve sentience and humanity cast a long shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't help but be in the rubble of something like that.
Just fill it in.
And
yeah.
not adapt to it or like find it fascinating.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
some of them could
you.
Be like Queen Lich leftovers.
Sure.
Why not?
It's a hodgepodge of everything.
Maybe
absolutely
maybe she's
everything.
Responsible for creating them and is like,
or,
I don't
or
want
it
them
might
anymore.
Be just like one tribe.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, the way I see it, Cap said it best, genetic slurry.
Now, here
it is
or,
the leftovers.
You know what I like better? If we're going with that kind of design for really unique kind of things or whatever, what if it's just like a gang of 10 people? We don't have to name every single one of them, but if it's like a gang of 10 or 20 people, Holly and Jack is the, again, going back to sort of the Mad Max Road Warrior sort of gang.
If they're wearing leather jackets and helmets and have, you know, just random claw hands here and there, we don't got to worry about giving them
it's
any
a good
kind
point,
of uniqueness.
Yeah.
They're just dudes. I mean, like, look at any of the minions from like Road Warrior, right? They're just clusterfucks. They could be human under there. They could be anything, you know.
But animating it is the thing. But we're putting the cart before the horse when I'm thinking of that. So.
We can also, I mean, we can have a couple of them that stand out if there's a
right,
design we
right.
really like. I mean,
right.
Bebop and Rocksteady. Whatever.
True.
What else we got? We got Ninja Cats from Japan.
Yeah. So
though.
That already kind of gives it away. But I was gonna say, what if
there's no subtlety to
yeah,
that?
Yeah. I was surprised you put it on the Facebook where people could see, because I'm like, oh, I was going to keep that a secret, but whatever. The idea was I was thinking of different kinds of villains they would fight and things like that, like what would be really cool. And I thought, well, what if season three, you know, like we're down the line. We were well familiar with Glampire, well familiar with robots, well familiar with all the stuff and Captain Scrap, Halloween Jack, the whole shebang. Then what if one day they're just hanging out in, you know, headquarters and they're building, like, you know, Narissa's fixing the thing or whatever. And then they hear something like up in the rafters and they're like, what the hell? And they look up. And out of the darkness, straight up ninjas, just ninjas, full cat black, like straight from the past.
In a cat
ninjas suit. Show up in here and they just start cutting shit up and they start fighting. And the lightning dog's like, what the fuck? They don't know how to handle with this stuff. And they just start fighting and this crazy fight breaks out. And then finally, like after these ninjas, they realize they're losing, you know, the smoke bombs and the whole thing. And you, the audience, are going, are these human ninjas? What the fuck's going on? Suddenly, because Pierre is really fast, he knocks off one of the masks. It's a fucking cat under there.
And of course, at this point, this will have been a long time, and the whole dogs and cats timeless quarrel will not have been addressed, not even once.
Right. And suddenly, an unconscious bloodlust forms. It's like, because they don't know what a cat is.
No, and
you
then
know,
all of a sudden, just a long, drawn-out, awesome chase scene.
Yeah, and the idea being, what if, meanwhile, because we have the different countries and who's doing what where, like, what if just over in Japan, the cats got loose there the way the dogs got loose on that planet.
So isolated.
Yeah, it's so isolated.
So cat-centric.
Yeah, and it's so cat-focused, cat-centric. What if the cats just kept growing up there? But the difference is they know exactly what the masters were like. They have so much knowledge on top of what the lightning dogs had on what the masters were really like and what was going on. They just live like the masters. The culture is alive and well over there. And
but they're cats. They're pissy little bitches. They're not going to tell the lightning dogs anything.
Right. It's like they're also very proud. You know, we're going into cat mode here.
They are,
you know.
Well, and they are the feudal Japanese.
Yeah, it is feudal Japan, but with cats.
I absolutely adore.
But when I mean feudal Japan, you got ninjas, but you got samurai.
Yes, samurai.
And if the lightning dogs ever go to Japan, you got samurai honor-bound cats who would fight alongside good guys like this, and you got the ninja cats who are like sneaky bitches, you know, who are, you know.
Now, I just have to ask, these samurai cats, do they enjoy discs with cheese and tomato sauce?
It may happen that there would be a pizza with perhaps anchovies on it during a sequence. How could we ignore the opportunity to present a samurai pizza cat?
And,
I mean, they've gotten farther than any turtle ever had.
My jokes get booed. I just gotta say, my jokes get booed. This is exactly something I would draw. All right. I'm all right with it. We're okay.
So definitely just ninja cats getting some samurai. But when I say samurai cats.
Now I'm already
cats,
imagining like in like season four, season five, like a Ronin cat.
I want Ken Watanabe to voice a cat. That's all I'm saying. I just
we
want
got a
Ken
Ronin
Watanabe
cat
to voice our cat.
That yeah. For some reason he lost his honor, and to seek it out, to regain it, he has to team up with the lightning dogs.
And that would be Ken Watanabe. Mm-hmm.
Now, I can imagine Glampire manipulating the cats into thinking that they need to take on the lightning dogs. Because it's late in the game. Glampire's like,
well,
fuck.
Ninjas are paid assassins.
Exactly. So he gets these people to fly all the way over or float all the way over to the
other side. As soon
as
Glampire finds out that there's like a bunch of cats living in Japan, he'll be like, ah,
ha, 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 ha. Yeah, yeah. It's like, I'll just sit this one out. Because think of it.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
That's a logical plan. Like, once you fought the lightning dogs for so long, and you're like, dude, I just, no matter
bring
what I do, I'm surrounded
force
by fools. What if I make them pick a fight with someone else and I just step back?
Let them fight.
It's like, let them destroy each other. And there you go. That's,
just send over a bunch of saucers and milk and let it wait for the blood to fall.
Exactly. And that's season three or season four.
I wanted
of Cat Pan.
I wanted to not like it.
Yeah?
I did. And there's no way I can't. I love it.
Thank you.
Bad Masters from a Forgotten Human Colony. That sounds really, really ominous.
Yes. Bad Masters from a Forgotten Human Colony. What that means is these are bad humans who lived on a forgotten human colony.
It's been thousands of years for them.
Yeah, it's been thousands of years for them. But think of it this way. These are, the picture I chose is from 2001 A Space Odyssey, because I just like the design of the spacesuits for whatever. I just thought, what if humans during the war, or whether it's a Glampire invasion or a nuclear war or whatever.
They were off planet.
Yeah, they've been off planet. They're on another planet for maybe 1,000 years. The timeline isn't nailed down precisely, but let's just, whatever. It's a long
but there's
ass
also
time.
Like, imagine, like, since they're the people placing the Farfetch'd, maybe there's faster than light technology, so they're experiencing time shorter.
Also, on a different planet, who knows? If you're on a different planet that moves slower, like, it's all relative.
If humanity is sending people out into the stars through dimensional portals, be it a tesseract or truly another dimension, we don't really know what the Farfetch'd is. Either way, it's not the only project out there, and there's going to be somebody else coming back.
And I'm also going to say, ultimately, we are developing what is essentially a cartoon show comic series that we can throw something out there and then figure out why later.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the idea of the Bad Masters is, like, let's say season 4 or season 5, you know, things are normal or whatever, then one day Masters show up, like, straight up humans in spacesuits. But of course the Lightning Dogs don't know this because they're just like space suited figures, and they're like, that kind of looks like Space Boy. Maybe Space Boy was a master from long ago who got exposed to some cosmic evil and is no longer human. He's just a walking spacesuit with, you know, energy or whatever. But if you see more humans wearing those same exact spacesuits and you're a Lightning Dog, you're like, oh shit, you know, what is this? There's a whole bunch of them. And then they take off the helmets and it's people under there. And they're breathing the air of the earth for the first time in who knows how long. And
tastes like butts.
Yeah. But now the twist on this is that they're bad. They're evil. They've been living on another planet for thousands of years. Wherever they were was a terrible place that they had to fight tooth and nail every day for hundreds of years just to survive.
And they, so they come back here, to Earth,
and they're fucking pissed.
They come here, and all of a sudden these creatures,
we were gone, call and them, you wrecked my shit.
Yeah. They call them masters, like, I can deal with that.
Yeah, yeah. And just like they see this Earth is destroyed. There's freaks everywhere. Maybe the only thing that they had was to hang on to the hope that if we just get back to Earth, it'll be wonderful. It'll be a Garden of Eden, and we can start again. And Earth is destroyed.
And, it's like coming back to your house and your dog's gotten out of his crate and just everything's on the floor and he's looking at you like,
yeah.
I like that. It like the idea of it takes a few episodes for the Lightning Dogs to realize they're bad.
Yeah.
Because at first you're like,
oh my gosh, this is why we originally came here. You're masters. And they're like, we're masters.
Yeah, we're okay with that. That means you're my slave, right?
That's
what that means.
Maybe not even right away, but that ultimately, that's ultimately where it goes.
Essentially, that's what the thought process is.
And it's just like, these are bad masters. Bad masters. Very bad masters.
Of course, Ken Corso's like,
Yeah,
exactly. He'll be losing his shit.
So that's not a thing that has to happen. I think that's an interesting idea to explore.
Yeah.
I think that is a season 5 idea, and based on the reaction that everybody just had, yes, that does have to happen.
Very down the line.
We'll just figure out how and when, because
That's a very late.
You know, that might even be one of the final arcs.
Yeah, exactly.
The return of the Masters.
Yeah.
So there's one last thing on this diagram that's unexplained, and it's very unexplained. It's some kind of like Cthulhu thing with question marks.
That, if you can see in the picture, there is a fine dotted line that leads down from that to Space Boy.
Yeah. Is that like some kind of like
Lovecraftian, like, space
creature
evil?
From out of space?
A cosmic evil. Because we were talking about Space Boy and we described him very well, but we have no idea what his origin is or what the point is. What if he was a master, came back maybe a long time ago? Maybe they thought they were sending him back, but they actually sent him someplace way worse.
It's an Event Horizon kind of situation.
Yeah, and he's no longer human. I'm just thinking it's an empty spacesuit with a Lovecraft energy monster inside.
Like he is inside of that spacesuit is all of the terror of the vastness of space, all of the coldness, the emptiness, being forgotten and alone, and all of the dark matter that exists between every particle seething into a whole galaxy of stars compressed within the scope of the spacesuit. He is knowing and unknowing simultaneously.
I love the idea that you once said where it's like if you're in the base of Lightning Dogs and all the lights go out and you just see this spacesuit figure walking down the halls in pitch dark, and inside the visor of the helmet, if you stare long enough, inside you see a galaxy. And looking into his helmet, all it does is remind you of how alone you are, how futile everything is. Basically, it's like absorbing every Lovecraft thing ever in the span of a few seconds, and you're like, oh, I can't deal with it, and you're done. So I loved that image, but I'm like, well, what? How does that work? And maybe we never even totally go into it. Maybe it's something that even Glampire is like, he just walks around. I don't even know what the hell to do with that thing. I can't control. You know, like it is an
evil that his race is aware of, and their way
they
to
just
deal
step,
with
sidestep
it is
it. Yeah,
exactly.
Leave.
Like,
yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
See that thing rocking down one side of the road? I walk
this,
to the other.
This would be the one thing that Glampire would be afraid of, is the idea. Because so far, out of all the things we've created, he's not afraid of anything. He's not even really worried about anything. But if there's some sort of cosmic evil out there that I don't want to rip off Lovecraft directly, but just there are things out there. Again, the idea, cracking open this universe, that there is a universe of possibilities out there. Although the whole thing takes place on Earth, it's kind of a space travel fantasy series.
Because, I mean, for our Lightning Dogs, this is traveling to an alien planet.
Exactly.
It's familiar to us, but it's not to them. And I guess we'll close on this. One of the things that we haven't even touched on is the oceans.
Yes, yes.
We haven't even touched on the oceans, and this is an
Captain
idea.
Captain Scrap is the only thing really ocean.
Well,
even
I mean,
close.
No, but I mean, certainly you guys are familiar with how much the geology of the planet Earth has shifted. I mean, we say the cats are from Japan. We don't even know what that means anymore. Japan definitely does not look the same. It could
be.
It could be a bit more of a continent like Indonesia, you know, or you know.
And this was even something that, as we were describing Space Boy, is something that I kind of thought of, and feel free to shoot it down. But what are our spacesuits based off of? Deep sea exploration. So what if Space Boy, what if this unspeakable horror didn't come from space? But that's what we attributed to, because he's wearing a similar suit. He was actually exploring deep sea. No, and I get it. After we explain more of Space Boy, the idea stopped making sense. But I still like the idea that there's something that has been going on underwater.
It just made me applying Space Boy to like a scuba suit thing is kind of cool. But all it did was make me think of the Scooby Doo diver, like.
Right. I think we can have water stuff that is completely independent of Space Boy.
Yeah, and we got Cap and Scrap after all.
I mean, the idea for me was that we ascribe the idea and
of the
name of
thing.
Space Boy, or we ascribe the name Space Boy to something that didn't actually come from space, kind of tying into the idea that there's so much left here that we still don't know that is equally terrifying.
Right. I do like the idea of like giant monsters in the ocean. They don't have to necessarily be from space or be some sort of.
And then we'll have a giant
evil
dog mech that comes along and fights
you. Yeah,
them.
More like Waterworld, where like that giant thing that almost eats Kevin Costner, but he ends up killing it somehow. You only see it for like a split second. Like, I want to know what's been happening under the ocean, because if you got crystals growing in the ocean, holy shit! You know, like, let me put it this way: I don't want to suddenly reveal that there is an Atlantis people, a fish people, and they're intelligent and they have a society. Feudal Japan, that's one thing. Atlantis under the ocean with fish people.
It's been done.
I like the idea that it's like basically a primordial soup bag down there.
Yes. No.
And so like giant monsters, krakens, all kinds of things.
Yes.
So that
the oceans? We don't go into the oceans.
Yeah, we don't go into the ocean. If anything, it's more Pacific Rim down there. It's just like there's kaiju in the ocean. I'm okay with that.
And like, there are like people like Captain Scrap. Like they're.
He's like, why do you think I left the ocean?
They're the emissaries.
It's terrible down there.
There can be like some clans that like. They live off the ocean, but it's a fucking battle.
Yeah. Like, Captain Scrap will go out onto the ocean every now and then.
The fact that he comes back is a fucking miracle.
Yeah, he's a badass. It's like, oh, Captain Scrap, he's kind of like a low-level, you know, tier villain or whatever. Really? He just doesn't give a shit. He sort of does it for money. Lightning Dogs, if they ever go out onto the ocean, they soon see how much of a badass Captain Scrap really is in order to deal with this on a daily basis.
Here's something weirdly personal. I don't have a fear of the ocean. I've grown up around the ocean my whole life. Ocean and me, we get along just fine. If anything, maybe I'm a little too fearless of the ocean. But most of the time that the ocean is present in my dreams, it's a stormy black abyss. Read into this however you will, but I think it's just more visually interesting that way. In the ocean, say you're hanging out by a dock, and there'll be like anemones and like all kinds of different fluorescent clusters of crap on there. It looks like so much crazy, completely unearthly garbage clinging to all this, the poles and the water and everything. If you were to submerge yourself, say, along the side of an industrial port, you'd see so much like strange stuff there. Yeah. Huge fish, giant grouper and everything. It's dark down there. The sunlight can't quite reach. There's just so much going on. Even the very ocean itself, just to take a gulp of that water, is filled with so many small things. It is very much like a primordial soup.
Yeah.
There's so much going on. So just imagine the waters of Earth are, like at this point in time, are an embodiment of every kind of unknown that could be attributed to it. Going out on that water is always a risk. Like being near it is kind of dangerous because it could cough up like a giant fucking sea cucumber that melts your skin off.
Right.
The sea is and should be absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, because
it's just the idea
for you to say, "Oh, I'll get weirdly personal and say I'm okay with the ocean." I have the exact opposite.
No, I'm saying that I'm okay with the ocean, but in my dreams, it is something to truly be feared.
In my reality, it's something to truly be feared.
No other reason.
If listeners, feel free, go into Google, type in scary ocean creatures, and do an image search.
Be done.
Look up the goblin shark. What's the little crab guy that moves his little pinchers real fast that it boils the water around?
You mean the one that can hit so hard that it's shattered glass? The rainbow mantis?
Yes, the rainbow mantis.
It's the rainbow mantis shrimp.
Yes.
And you know what's funny? It actually can see so much more of the spectrum than we can.
Yes.
So that might be something fun to tie into Narissa, that she starts losing her mind.
I'll end this with two words. Bloop noise.
Done.
I'll link to Bloop Noise on this episode's page. Basically, the shore for the Lightning Dogs universe is the day after a hurricane every single day.
Did anyone here ever see the movie On the Road?
Nope.
No.
The whole movie, they're trying to get to like the coast, and it's not. This isn't like the final shot, but they do get to the coast at one point. And you're thinking, if they just get to the coast, maybe everything will be okay because it's gray, ashen, barren all throughout the streets and everything like that. They get to the coast, just like everything else, it's terrible. It's just like it's exactly pretty much how I picture the ocean in Lightning Dogs, where it's just, you're like, man, is anything even alive out there? You know, you have no
and
idea.
It's like, the answer is no, everything is alive out there.
What would be a fun kind of visual image is, yeah, it looks like a hurricane, but the reason it looks like a hurricane is it's all these barricades that people tried to erect to keep what was ever in the ocean that failed.
Yeah, it's just kaijus fighting under the ocean. Why are these waves so big? It's like kaijus nonstop fighting in the Marianas Trench.
Oh, my God. Oh, the mental image just of this like giant wave, these two waves crashing together, and you see deep, deep silhouette.
You get a quick glimpse of the top of something's head, and then the waves just close back up. You're like, oh, okay, we're ain't going down there no more.
Let's go back to Glampire.
Who wants to go work for Glampire now? Because he'll protect us from whatever the hell that stuff was.
Hey, guys, I could go for a potato. Idaho? Anybody?
Idaho. Kansas, yeah.
That was a lot of Lightning Dogs.
Yeah, that was a marathon.
Wasn't nearly enough.
No, there's still so much more
we
can do.
I want more.
There will be more. We got maybe like one, two more of these in us, and then I think we can probably start writing the Lightning Dog show Bible and like really, like, I mean, we've already started writing stuff, but like really complete it.
Now that we got most of the powers and stuff nailed down, the main core cast sounds pretty good. After that, we need to tighten up some of the villains, figure out the villain stuff, and the basic world building.
The base, the vehicles.
History as well. Yeah.
History, vehicles, and
I feel like the toy stuff, like the vehicles and base stuff, I think that'll be very obvious and come easy after we do history and world building.
Baseline stuff, crystal powered.
Yeah.
Looks like a hot rod, giant fucking tires in the back. Pretty much all we need.
Finishing up some of the villains, some villain designs, because we just
Glampire. Glampire's a tough nut to crack to really hit that.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the bulge, but on top of that,
Brian did give us an edict for Glampire, and
what do you have to say?
That is, every single time you see him, every feasible scene change, he's wearing a different outfit.
I love that idea. Yeah. I remember you told me about that. I'm like, that is awesome.
It's challenging. It's unrealistic within the scope of a 1980s cartoon show, but it's a necessity. He is Glampire after all.
Yeah, that's definitely in the character.
No,
if whether or not it'll be pulled off on TV, that's a different story.
Like, why do you think that he took one of the humans' old robo servants and has that guy constantly working for him?
Had to bring him away.
Where are these outfits coming from?
And I know that it was said, and kind of, you know, that he's there to actually protect him. But I really like the idea that when this assassin comes up, he's someone at the door for you, sir.
Yeah, of course. You know, if all he has to do is tell Glampire that there's a robot here, and he'll
says
out.
That after his hand is detached and there's an AK-47. Underneath it, you know, yep. Someone's at the door for you, sir.
Just that kind of deadpan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I love Lightning Dogs.
We gotta think of a "I love being a turtle" line for Lightning Dogs.
Well,
like,
I mean,
I love being able to lick my own balls.
Tony can speak for himself.
I mean, you know, Lightning Dogs never turn tail.
You know, that's pretty good.
That's more a declaration though, as opposed to just this run as jubilant. A pack.
Yeah. I think it's just
rough and we're tough.
That's general wet work. It's like the roughest and the toughest.
Lastly, we got this wonderful care package from Anduin a while ago. He said, "Attach this letter is a device that will hopefully spark a chain reaction that is the Lightning Dogs. This is forged and beaten by mechanical beasts, fired in kilns filled with brimstone, charged with the essence of lightning, and bombarded 17 times with lasers. Lasers make everything better." And in the package was a spark plug. Thank you, Anduin. This has finally sparked and rekindled the flame of Lightning Dogs.
It truly has.
And we will treasure it always. And maybe if ever the opportunity presents itself, we can put it in a car. Honestly, I have no idea how these things work.
You don't want to put that in a car, man. You got to mount that on the wall.
Ooh. One of the reasons Kid gets the powers that she does is she's wearing a spark plug around her neck.
Well, now we know who to thank for that idea.
That's a pretty cool necklace, actually, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it fits in with the 90s idea of, hey, I'm just going to put something on a string and wear it as a necklace. It's cool, man.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right. There you go. Anduin, that one's on you. Thank you so much for loving the Lightning Dog so much. It's one of our favorite things. So glad to be back.
Feels good, man. Feels good.
Never again will we wait so long, because it's been painful for us.
We don't turn tail.
We never turn tail. We
run as a pack.
Yeah.
Lightning Dog.
Lightning.
Aru.
And with that, the Lightning Dogs were back in action. We were still a ways off from having clarity as to where we were headed, but as far as keeping the project alive, we were back in full effect. With some changes, that is. It wasn't only Brian's life that heated up and pulled him away from regular appearances on Nerdy Show, the same thing happened with Hex. Very different events, similar effects. He became a dad, and has since moved on to starting his own tabletop game design studio, Screech Dragon. From this point onward, the keeper of the Lightning Dogs' kennel are Cap, Doug,
And of course, Pun Master Supreme, yours truly. We're dead set on making Lightning Dogs as an animated series, and with your help, we can take the first steps towards this dream. If all these nutso concepts tickle your fancy, tell a friend about them. Spread the word. One of the first things studio investor types look for these days is proof that a concept can work. And coming to them with an active fan base, that's some irrefutable proof right there that what we've got's got traction. We've already got a devoted pack, but we need to enlist some new recruits. Unleashing a thunderous bark about the awesomeness of Lightning Dogs is amazing, but if you've got some bones to spare, subscribe to us on Patreon. With your help, we can increase productivity, do cool projects like comics, create episode animatics, or important meat and potatoes kind of stuff like afford production costs, paying for audio editing, concept art from artists that aren't me, and even just the cost of existing as a business. There's also extra special projects we're working towards. Like having creator of Gargoyles, co-creator of Young Justice, Greg Wiseman, review our pitch bible for Lightning Dogs and advise us as to how we should move forward. He's agreed to do it, but let's face it, dude can't do it for free. After that, we're working toward bigger goals, like getting Doug to quit his job. He's agreed to come and work for Lightning Dogs for Chump Change. If that happens, we'll be able to make this a weekly series and crank out much more Lightning Dogs awesomeness. So join our pack at patreon.com/lightningdogs. You'll help us create more content, and you'll receive a lot in return, including early release episodes, concept art, high-res production materials, exclusive recordings, and anything else we can dig up. Join us next time as we continue the adventures of the Lightning Dogs! Thanks for listening to Lightning Dogs, the official podcast presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes. Like and follow us on SoundCloud, Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding us via Patreon. At patreon.com/nerdyshow, you can fund the whole Nerdy Show Network and unlock a plethora of amazing bonus content and early releases. And at patreon.com/lightningdog, you can fund the further development of the entire Lightning Dogs universe from podcasts to animation, while getting all kinds of behind-the-scenes bonus material and extras. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorship. Be sure to follow Lightning Dogs and Nerdy Show on all of your favorite social networks, like Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. We're on all of them. Just search for Lightning Dogs. Or head to our hub for all things canine at lightningdogs.com. From our podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. Because if it's geeky, we've got it covered. Infer. Lightning Dogs.
Sorry, Wolfman. Didn't mean to step on your toes.
I got no toes.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.